So Danny, we've now survived the school year and we're moving into the summertime. But the fact that we're still spending more time at home means that it's a great time for us to catch up on some programming that maybe you'd put aside or something that you've been waiting to watch on demand.
Absolutely,
What is
Jared.
one of those programs that you are dying to tell the audience about?
Well, of course, I am rewatching all of the seasons of Jersey Shore, but I don't think that that is what you're asking me for. The show that I
Is that
cannot wait.
possible to rewatch Jersey Shore?
I was talking to one of my pals, and they were doing the same thing. So it is totally normal behavior. Leave
Keep
me
telling
alone.
yourself that.
But the new show that I cannot wait to watch every night is on Amazon Prime, and it is called Upload. It is so good. So many of my friends told me to watch it, and I just like kind of looked at the picture and I was like, nope, not my style. It's not a documentary about murder or a reality show. It's not for me, but it's so good. Have you watched it yet, Jared?
I have not yet. So you're telling me this is something I need to add to my watch list.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you'll love it. It's so good. Okay, Jared, most school is over and we're not learning at home anymore. Are you still working at home?
Do you want to know what, Danny? I'm
Oh,
always
I want to
learning at
know.
home. I'm
Oh,
always
yeah?
learning at home because you know what I have at my house?
What's that?
I have public television.
So do we.
And that is one of the best ways that I have learned about my world throughout my life.
Oh, I love that. So, is that what we're going to be chatting about today?
Today, we are going to be chatting about the role that public media can play in educating not just kids, but everybody.
I'm here for that.
And we are very fortunate to have a special guest with us today. Would you like to meet him, Danny?
I would love to meet him.
Today, we are proud to welcome Tim Earnessy to our podcast. Tim is currently the Vice President of Education for NEDA, and he leads NEDA's team to strengthen and amplify public media's education mission. He oversees professional development, education services, NEDA's peer learning communities, and the annual NEDA conference. Prior to working at NEDA, he was the Director of Development and Marketing with the WGVU Public Media, where he led the development and business team, as well as marketing, community engagement, digital content, creative, and education areas. Sounds like he did a lot there, by the way. He was with WGVU for 13 years, three as an underwriting sales rep in the past 10 years as Director of Development and Marketing. Tim is a proud Air Force veteran, having served from 1990 to 1998, working with the 439th Military Airlift Wing and the 127th Air Wing as a PERSCO team member and the 110th Fighter Group as a weapons loader on an A-10 aircraft. Tim has been deployed domestically and overseas in support of several Air Force operations. Tim is married with two sons, including a sophomore at Adrian College, who currently runs track and field, and a nine-year-old that recently graduated from third grade and knows more than the entire family put together. UEN Homeroom is pleased to welcome Tim Earnessy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Glad to be here today.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
We're hanging in there.
We
Everybody
are.
working from home and enjoying it still?
Yeah, still working from home. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see, but it's great to have you here.
Thanks.
All right. So, something that we always do on the podcast is to get to know you a little bit beyond the bio. Is we're going to ask you three questions from a Utah kindergartner. How do you feel about that?
That is awesome. They're usually the smartest one in the room. And I learned everything I knew in kindergarten. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Jared, too. So here is our first question.
What are you more scared of, a horror movie or a spider?
Horror movie. Horror movies are not my things, but I live in South Carolina now and I have had to get used to spiders. So.
Oh.
So are
I
they
don't like
different
horror
from
movies.
Michigan?
They are definitely, moving from Michigan down here, they are definitely different. They seen black widow spiders and there's supposedly a plate spider or something. I mean, huge ones, like 3, 4 inches wide. So
Yeah.
they're a little crazy, but I don't do horror movies.
Sounds like you're living in a horror movie with those things running around.
Only when it
Was
doesn't
gonna
hurricane
say,
season. I do dance really good when I run into a spider web, though, just to make sure it's nothing too crazy.
All right. Thank you. Our second question is,
what is your favorite way to eat pizza?
Ooh. Well, if it's a good pizza, like a New York style pizza, you got to fold it in half and then kind of flip it over and then jam the whole thing in. If it's a deep dish Chicago, you got to do it with a fork and knife. So, you know, kind of depends on what style of pizza you're getting, but I would probably say fast and often is my favorite way.
Sounds like our house.
Yes.
Okay. And your third question.
What is your favorite snack?
Ooh. Well, I don't know if it's I'll give you two answers. I don't know if it's really a snack, but I was born in Philadelphia. So anytime I have any food questions, ask me a cheesesteak. You know, you got to go to D'Alessandro's. It's the only real, if you're from Philly, the only real place is D'Alessandro's. And we can fight over that later. Jim's on 6th is okay, but D'Alessandro's is the best. That's a snack.
See, and this is crazy because those are the two that usually get all the publicity, the two that you just mentioned.
Absolutely. Well, that's because the tourist things get all the publicity. The real, I mean, like in
where
Utah.
Where were you before I went to Philadelphia?
You should go for Utah food and not the places everybody goes. Come on. But since I've been down here in South Carolina, it has to be pimento cheese. You know, you can't, and it's on everything. It's great with just crackers or burger. You put pimento cheese is getting up there, but it will never top the Philly cheesesteak.
Danny, have you ever had pimento cheese?
I don't know if I have. Probably.
We had it when I was a kid on crackers and things.
No.
But I'm sure it's like completely homogenized stuff that they make and ship all over the world because we don't get anything like that locally.
Oh, no. If you ever get down here to South Carolina, we'll take you to a few different places. Every restaurant has their own pimento cheese style. And then other people, everybody's got a recipe on the street for their own style of pimento cheese. But it is definitely good. My arteries aren't happy, neither my doctor, but it's still worth it.
I feel like anything with cheese can't be wrong. So I fully support your answers on this, Tim.
Good.
You talk so much about cheesecakes now. I got to ask, do you like Cheese Whiz on it? Is that kind of the thing?
Well, you can do it's a Whiz Wit. So that's the official way to say it. You can do that. But I was always a provolone guy. But with the peppers and onions and all. But I've accidentally or maybe on purpose been known to drive 12 hours to get a cheesesteak. My door in Michigan to D'Alessandro's was 11 hours and 43 minutes with obeying the speed limit and no traffic jams. And I've been known to do that and get a cheesesteak and spend the night, get another one in the morning and go back to Michigan. So
you seem to have that route planned out pretty well. Yeah, I don't think that was
bad. I do it by sleep, yeah. But it's historical and educational because along the way, usually I could get to D'Alessandro's, and everybody that knows has education in our history of our country, you go downtown to Philadelphia, you see the Liberty Bell, you see Constitution Hall, you see all those things, and then I'd leave, and I could usually make it out of Philadelphia going through Valley Forge to Gettysburg before I had to eat the first cheesesteak that I bring home with me. And then I could usually make it to about where Flight 93 unfortunately went down and get the second cheesesteak. So, you know, it's kind of history, educational, and food all combined into one.
I like that. Do you know how far it is from your current home?
9 hours and 42 minutes.
Oh, so you... So
it's closer.
You set up the journey.
Yeah, I just haven't done it yet. But I've been to Baltimore, and I was only 90 minutes away, and I think that's a couple months ago with my wife, and that's about the closest I've ever been with not actually veering off to get a cheesesteak. We've been on vacation in New York, and she fell asleep and woke up, and we were right outside of D'Alessandro's on Wendover Street by the park, and she didn't know where we were. So it's like, oops, I made a wrong turn.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my kind of snack, so there you go, yeah. Forget the nuts and chips and things like that. A cheesesteak is always a good idea.
That's right. And again, it's all that education. I mean, how can you not go to that area? And
this is important.
It's free to go to. You know, why not?
So, Tim, we mentioned that you're currently the Vice President of Education for NEDA, but maybe some of our listening audience doesn't totally understand that acronym or what you're involved in. Do you mind just giving us a little bit of background about what NEDA is and then maybe tell us a little bit more about the role you play there?
Absolutely. So NEDA is an acronym. In public media, we do a couple things very, very well. We have acronyms for lots of things. And we always have very long program titles. with colons in them. NEDA is officially the National Educational Telecommunications Association. It's a formulation been around for over 50 years. There used to be regional associations, so Northeast, Southeast, Northwest, Southwest, years ago, that supported educational content. So this is back in the day where they'd have educational programming, and they would literally Greyhound bus from stop to stop and bring it into school buildings for teachers, as probably Jared, you and I may be the only oldest ones on this to remember when they'd wheel in the VCR cart and, you know, it come clinking down the hallway in your classroom. And that was the day you loved class because you got to watch a movie. That was some of the foundings of NEDA. And it was called SECA. The Southeast one was called SECA at the time. But you would have these programmings that would be distributed from public television stations around the country. And so that was the start of it. And then it's evolved into NEDA, the national organization. And our role is to support public television stations from UEN to Guam and Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, to all over the country in support of their educational missions. So it's everything from distributing content of local programs that stations have to helping them to understand and work, or not necessarily understand, but find unique ways to take the content off the television screen or off the tablet or the mobile device and into the community and get it into the classroom. And vice versa, to work with teachers and students and educators on what kind of things can we provide to them resource-wise. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell. And we also help support stations across the country on the financial side. So as a local station, UEN might say, hey, we've got a lot of accounting things that take a lot of our time. NEDA is one of our biggest pieces of our organization, supports the accounting side of things, so you can focus on your educational mission and do those things and be involved in your local communities, because that is a very unique thing in public media, is it isn't just a program or a television show. It is a education-based thing that you can take and do different pieces and parts with. So my role, that's kind of neat as a whole. My role is actually only 18 months old. So before this, there was not a vice president of education at NETA. A couple of years ago, the board sat down and said, what do we want to do for the future? And where is the future of public media? Well, when you talk future, you always talk heritage and lineage as well, and the past. And the foundation of public media, the cornerstone of public media that we all know, is education. Mm-hmm. If you ask people about PBS or public media in general, you ask what it is, invariably you're going to hear probably about Julia Child. You're going to hear about Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch. And if you're really smart, you'll know what color Oscar was originally. That's kind of a tidbit. He wasn't always green.
What?
And
okay, now I need to know what the answer is.
You're going to have to look it up there. Homework from homeroom to find out what color.
I love it.
You'll hear those things, but you'll also hear about this young man by the name of Fred Rogers. And so many people across the country have stories of Fred Rogers, and that's what public media was founded on. And so NEDA made that decision years ago to really bring that back to the forefront of what they do for stations, and really be hyper-focused on that. And so my position was created. And when we talk education, it's a couple levels of education. It's education for working with our national partners like PBS and the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and APTS, America's Public Television Stations, and NPR, and all these national other orgs. And Jared got the answer already. You Googled it, didn't you? You failed. That's cheating. Anyway. So
I had to know.
He hasn't been listening to you since you mentioned Oscar.
No, I'm sure he hasn't. I'm used to that, though. But we work with all these other organizations, and they'll maybe roll out a new show on PBS, like Molly of Denali or something. And then local stations will say, how can we take that and get that into schools and do some local community engagement? We'll work on that level in the education space. And the other flip side of that is taking all of the great assets that stations are doing, from UEN to, again, you know, PBS Idaho or Idaho Public Television, and bringing those together and then sharing them with everybody else in the country so that they can see those great things. That's one part of the education. So the kind of maybe the big E part. And the little E part of education is the professional development for all of the staff and team members across public media. As I said, we all have our own stories. We all have our own reason why we work in public media. But we also all say we may have come in as a receptionist or a producer director or an audio engineer. And someday we want to either be the head of audio engineering, or we want to lead a station, or we want to be the fundraising manager. And how do we help people and our own colleagues grow in that educational space? Once you leave that formal classroom of post-secondary education or your master's or doctorate or whatever level you're at, what else can you do to learn your craft and your trade? And so we support both sides of that education space.
That's awesome, Tim. You're definitely passionate about what NIDA does for everyone. I'm wondering, where did your interest in public media start?
Well, this again, all of us in public media have that story. So, excuse me. Mine starts in this little tiny small town in Rotterdam Junction, New York. Again, born in Philadelphia, lived in New Jersey for a few years, moved to upstate New York. Rotterdam Junction, I mean, literally, if you blinked your eye, it was gone. You know, we had the elementary school, the little baseball field, Fred's Floyd, I think it was, with the gas station in town, and a church where my dad was the pastor. And that was about it. One quarter mile behind my house was the Erie Canal, quarter mile the other way was the Mohawk River. So that was kind of my, in three houses, including ours, and then half mile, three quarters mile, either direction, there was nothing. So three houses and the farm across the street, that was it. And at the time, you actually had to get up out of your chair and turn the television. We had these big boxes in the room that were like 4 feet by 4 feet, it felt like. And you had to get out of your chair to turn the channel and move these rabbit ears around. And
is that how you got stepped in before all of our like fancy watches reminded us to stand up?
Yes, exactly. You got your steps in. You had, I mean,
your dad told you to change the channel. Like, hey, go over and change that channel.
Telling was good. I usually got a sock thrown. No. But at the time, there were very few television programs on. And so when I was growing up, there were two that were really prominent that had just come out. And that was Fred Rogers or Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, as well as Sesame Street. Sesame Street appealed to me because there was a kid named Ernie on there, you know, Bert and Ernie. My last name's Ernesty. Nobody could ever pronounce it. I became known as Ernie because there was two Tims in my little small kindergarten class. And I either be called Timmy or Ernie. So I chose Ernie because of Sesame Street. So that was my nickname for school. And Mr. Rogers, I'd come home. I was that typical kind of latchkey kid. I'd come home and my parents were not always, but a lot of times working. And Mr. Rogers was the buddy and the friend. And he had the land of make-believe and Trolley and Tiger. And, you know, he had all these things, King Friday. And that's kind of started my journey. I got passionate and I learned a lot about it. I'm pretty sure everybody on this call can probably still sing the Pinball Machine song. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. See, we all got it. And we can do conjunction, junction. What's your function? I mean, that is ingrained into the DNA of who we are. And so I kind of had that growing up. Went away from public media, obviously, in typical fashion. About 12, you lose interest unless you watch Nova or Nature. Yeah. Went on with my life, came back, and when my now 19, almost 20-year-old was born, all of a sudden I found myself watching these programs again, the kids' shows, and enjoying them probably more than I should have, and probably more than he was, and had a chance to return to public media. And it was one of those things that I'd done a lot of different careers and different jobs in my life. And that's where home felt, if that makes sense. I came back in and I had the opportunity one point in time to go to QED just for a station visit because my cousin at the time happened to work there. And I literally was like Jared trying to figure out what color Oscar was because I didn't hear a thing she said for the first hour we were talking. All I knew is she said she was going to give me a tour of the studio where Mr. Rogers was recorded. And so I heard nothing until she's like, ready for a tour? I'm like, yeah. I was down the hallway before she even like sat up, I think, and got to go to the studio and see King Friday's Castle, the set piece, and see Owl's Tree, and the one square that was still unpainted on the floor of the studio, you know, and see that stuff. And it just, for whatever reason, it brings back those memories of learning things and opening up that world of possibilities to know I can do anything. So I worked for a long time and I never thought I'd leave the station. But when this opportunity came open, it was an opportunity to make an impact and to learn more from so many stations and to help lead the professional development side of our future in public media. And with my own story of knowing that my grandfather was illiterate, dropped out in third grade. My grandmother dropped out in fifth grade, even though she wanted to be a school teacher, because she had to work the farm in Southwest Minnesota. And, you know, for me, education was always a struggle post-secondary because there's better things to do until later in life. To be able to do that and take all that stuff that you learned along the years and see my kids and see younger people coming into public media, walking right out of college, and you'd ask them, you know, why are you here? Oh, I like the job. Public media is kind of fun, you know. And they'd say, well, no, really, why are you here? Why are you doing what you do? And you'd find some spark somewhere. It'd be a, well, you know, when I was growing up, there was a, I forget the name of the show now. That's not good. There was Reading Rainbow, or there was this, or there, and you see the impact that non-traditional education has on kids. It's amazing. So I know that was a long diatribe. Sorry.
No, but I love the story.
This is, I think, what we're about and what we all do. And so if you ever get those chances, go see those places like that and ask yourself that story. Don't be afraid to share it, because you're inspiring somebody else, and to know that it's okay to share, you know, the time Fred Rogers made him cry, or Julia Child taught him to cook, or there's one station young man that I know that is an artist, and it's because he was sick on vacation with his family. And this young man, Air Force veteran, by the way, named Bob Ross, was on his local television in the hotel, and he became a painter, and he watched him painting, and he came and said, Mom, I want to be a painter. And the kid today, he's a painter, he's a graphic artist working at a public television station because of Bob Ross. And he was sick on vacation. You know, those are the stories you find in public media.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to come back from a break in just a minute while I take a chance to Google and fact check some of the stuff that Tim's been talking about. By the way, in case you're not aware, Oscar was originally orange.
Hey, Jared, isn't it fun to use YouTube to learn more about education? I feel like there's so many resources, but sometimes it's hard to choose what to watch.
Well, that's why I love UEN PD TV. This curated playlist from UEN Video follows along with Utah educators sharing their classroom and school innovations. Some of the videos are short and fun, while some others really dive deep into how schools are excelling into educational technology.
Well, you've got me hooked. Where do I find it?
It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/UEN video, and the PDTV episodes are right there in their own playlist. It's time to start watching. Well, we're back. Again, we're joined by Tim Ernesty from NEDA. Tim, what role do you feel like public media can play in helping people learn?
Wow. again, biased, but I think a lot. And it's because public media is based on lifelong learning. So I think it's that outside of the classroom, when you talk formal education, outside the classroom and inside the classroom. So outside of the classroom in a elementary school age, probably up to eighth grade, a lot of these kids are going home and watching public television. So they can watch a Daniel Tiger, or they can watch an educational content like Curious Crew, which is for middle school kids out of East Lansing, Michigan. They can watch those things, or Nova or Nature, or they can watch stuff that isn't relevant at all. Let's be honest. We all want our kids to be outside. They're not all going outside. But if they can watch Nature Cat and suddenly think it's cool to go explore, you know, they will. So I think that's that supplement for that formal education. Inside of the classroom, public media has done a great job of taking the vision of Mr. Rogers and transforming it over the last few years into that digital space, whether it be PBS Learning Media or assets that I know UEN has and provides to teachers, that they can pull little snippets and little clips into the classroom. And I watch a kid's eyes light up when they're in a classroom where they think they have to sit there. I remember writing this in my thesis for school. You got to sit there and you got to sit up straight and everything better be perfect. And you have to institutionalize learn. As soon as you throw a clip up of a Daniel Tiger or a Wildcrats or something, their like eyes light up, and all of a sudden you've broken down all the barriers to learn something new. And I think that role in that formalized setting is good, and it helps teachers. I've had teachers that when they discover the assets that public media had that they watched as a kid and didn't realize there's actually assets to take them into that formalized instruction into a classroom, they cry. I've literally watched one teacher go, I've been up stressing about doing lesson planning for kids. And then I found this resource and, oh my gosh, it's all there for me and stuff I trust. Because that's the other part of it. It's that trusted resource. On the unformalized or informalized learning, you learn things like Jared learned Oscar was orange today. And tomorrow we might learn something about space or something about who knows what we could learn. And that's that lifelong learning that I think all of us gravitate to, even if we say we don't like education or we don't like learning. Let's be honest, we do. I've turned into a yard dork on once with coronavirus going on. I'm watching.
As I'm listening to you, it's interesting because like you're describing, kids kind of learn in that informal setting and that becomes kind of their knowledge. And when that gets brought into the classroom, those things that they've learned on their own from public television, it kind of means like they've got the secret password, right? Like they already knew that and they can share what they've learned about that coming with that prior knowledge that they got on their own.
Exactly.
Well, and it's probably linked with like a fun song or the character that said the thing. And so it's just so much more personal to them.
So since it's a fun song, Danny, which fun songs do you know?
Oh my gosh. Well, so I have a 7-year-old. And so we like channel 7 for us here is our PBS channel. And so much Daniel Tiger happens before we were on coronavirus break, before school every day. That was like the only thing he was allowed to watch. And so, oh man, we sing about like, when you're sick, rest is best.
Notice I didn't ask you, Jared. Danny's voice was better for that.
Yeah, you're not going to catch me singing Daniel Tiger right now.
So we've talked a lot about what public media can do for people and for educators, but what can our local PBS stations, what can they do to make a difference in education? What should teachers know about?
I think what they should know about is the resources. First of all, that PBS station is not a station. It's a group of individuals that believe in the same mission and the same thing that you're trying to do. And they are literally there to support you as an educator. I remember when I was at the local station, when I talked to teachers, I say, you know, I have all these resources and assets for you. They're like, yeah, sure you do. You're going to make me change the way I teach. You don't have what I really need. And then I every now and then get one that would come in and I'd be like, hey, you see those boxes over there in the corner of my storage thing? Those are 150 summer educational toolkits that I can't get rid of. Could you use them? And their eyes like, what? This is what stations have these kinds of things or can get access to these kinds of things. So they are the people that want to do things for you. They're not that commercial industrialized building that you can't walk into and not ask for resources. I mean, right now you maybe can't walk into it, but you know, I think it's connecting with those stations. Every station is going to be different across the country. Some stations are working with their local educators to produce content and educational resources that are very specific to their community and addressing community needs. And the community needs in Utah may be different than they are going to be in Salt Lake City are going to be different than they are in Provo. And so those stations are trying to figure out ways to address that specific area. Case in point that I think of is years ago, not even that long ago, you know, we talk about representing children in different diversity and different things on a television screen. Well, there was not representation of Native Alaskan communities. And now there's Molly of Denali. That local station worked with the local Inuit people to create a program and educational resources. And now those local children can see themselves on a television show and feel valued in that. So I think it's make the phone call. I mean, and if they're not going to pick up, call me. I'm on Twitter, at T. Earnesy. And if you can spell it, more power to you. For you, but we'll get you in touch. The stations that's what they're there for. And that's what they want to do. They are begging to knock on your door. So knock on theirs.
You know, it's amazing to me kind of having spent a little bit of time working with NEDA and this community that public television and public media is involved with, the similarities between those communities and the educator communities. Just such a willing group to share their resources, to bring you in, to make you part of the team. And what Tim's saying, it fits hand in glove with that. It's just this idea that everybody's on the same team. You know, we're not trying to sell you something. We're trying to give you something that you can use so that you can enrich the people, your learners' lives, whoever they are.
And we don't sometimes know what you need. Tell us, let's figure it out together. I mean, right. That's what public media is about, is we have kids in your classrooms. We live in the same community. We're all in this together, which I know sometimes right now is being used a lot, but it's true.
Yeah. So Tim, we know that NEDA is kind of expanding a little bit to provide more of a professional learning presence for your members, right? For the people involved in public media. Specifically, we want to talk a little bit about a new project that you've unveiled this year called Public Media Learns. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what that is and how you're using that to benefit the lives of public media employees across the country.
Absolutely. Public Media Learns was a brainchild of a lot of us for years, understanding that when you come into public media, you come in for a passion, but you need to grow. You need to figure out what that future looks like. And so it's a series of courses, and we just launched January 28th. I did not sleep the 27th, the night before we announced it. And it is an online learning ecosystem where you have everything from collaboration spaces for courses to truly certified courses that you can walk through and get certifications in editorial standards or in digital assets. The Digital Immersion Learning Center is one of them. And so it's that space where colleagues can come together, support each other and learn. But it's also that space where if you're new to public media, you can walk in and say, what does it mean when they say X? I mean, we joke about acronyms. I said that at the beginning. We are an acronym soup of craziness in public media. Every organization and every industry has their own. So how do you learn those things? How do we address returning to the office in a space and an era where we want to make sure everybody is health-wise is protected? How do you do recording nowadays? Mm-hmm. You're not going to use the lapel mic anymore. Well, what does that mean? And how do you learn that? How do you learn lighting? Lighting 20 years ago in a studio for a studio production with Fred Rogers is a lot different than it is right now, where we can do it in Jared's man cave basement. I mean, it's totally different. So how do we learn those things? And that's what Public Media Learns is. And it's just growing. There's so many great organizations at a national level that have created these assets. This is the one space that we're trying to grow to, the space that you go to. That if you walk in the door at public media, you're a general manager in public media and you need to learn something, it's there for you. And it's a dream of so many of us. And to me, I kind of say, and it may be corny, but it's kind of the promise of public media that when you come in because you believe in Fred Rogers or you believe in what our values and what we are, that when you come in, we're going to believe in you as much as you believe in what public media means.
So, that's awesome. I love that there's kind of like this centralized hub now for all of the people in public media. I think that's really
cool. Well, and one of the things that you're saying, Tim, with your last statement is just once you become part of the public media family, we want to keep you. We want to help you reach the goals that you have set for yourself. Not to have to go somewhere else in private business or something to find that. Right. We want to give you opportunities to find yourself here.
Yeah. And for those that maybe want to do it, but don't really see a future, it's like, why? Why not? And it's education. I think of it in the education space, which we're talking about very specifically. There are so many educators out there that go into the classroom and are on the front lines of teaching for so many years, and they want to still be involved somehow. But they don't want to deal with a three-year-old anymore, not three, I guess, but the six or seven or eight-year-old anymore. And how do they do that? And public media can be that space where you can do those things and you can have time to tell an in-depth story on the content side or engage a community at a deep level. We have so many challenges right now in society that need to be discussed, and you can provide a space for dialogue. And, you know, you don't have to go to all of the big commercial places. You can do it at a television station, because we're not a television station, we're a content delivery system that delivers content across multiple platforms, including together. So that's my hope is, and again, it's all a lot of ours. It's a dream of a lot of people in public media. I just get the have the privilege of being the one that has to put my face and my name behind it and launch it. But it is very minimal to do with me. It's everybody else and the colleagues around the system that are peeking us on the table or on the every conference we go to saying, you should put this course in, or the people actually building the courses and putting them in and taking them. That's what it's about. So hopefully years from now, when I retire, it'll still be there and people will still be using it, because we have 9,000 plus employees in public television and we need to get all of them on board and get those teachers that look at it or community people look at it and go, oh my gosh, I wish my company had that. Don't wish if your company had that. Come work for public media, because we do.
So speaking of looking years in the future, what do you know of the future for public media, and how does that impact all of our communities and schools?
There's so much. It's one of those things that the future of public media is very bright. I think we're at a monumental stage right now. As we've experienced COVID-19 over the last several months, and there's been a lot of distance learning going on, stations around the country have stepped up and delivered so much to their communities. School districts across the country are using assets from public media stations. Schedules have changed. There's more people watching in Detroit. I know for a fact that has as many people watching during the day programs like Daniel Tiger and stuff as they do in the evening watching Nova Nature and Antiques Roadshow, because kids are learning because the school districts are driving them to it and using those resources and those assets. And I think if public media can figure out, and there are a lot of people doing that right now, figure out how can we continue that. And as we look at the future of broadcasting with a new generation, we went to digital several years ago. Everybody remembers those little boxes on the top of their television thing that we're required to get. Well, yep. There's another whole thing of that coming out now called ATSC3, and it's next gen television. Well, next gen television will, for the first time, and I'm going to quote one of our general managers here, Susie at WKAR Public Media. I have to say that or I'll get in trouble, because I'm in education. If you don't cite your sources, you get in trouble. Remember that, kids. But anyway, Susie stated that, you know, for the first time in our history, broadcasters will be able to broadcast to any connected device. And we will be able to get instant feedback and give assets to people that want to find it in the right time, right then. So Danny, if you're interested in math and you're watching a show that all of a sudden has a math thing, you're watching Peg Plus Cat and you really get into it. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh. And you start clicking on all these things. We can feed you even more assets off the assets we have instantly through next gen television than you could ever have before, right then when you want it.
That's awesome. And imagine
you could expand and keep diving, all of a sudden become an expert in trigonometry or whatever it is. That's the future of public television. And it's not just over the broadcast signal. It is finding the space where we can connect and have discussions. Because everybody, for years, you've heard how television's going away. That big 4-foot by 4-foot box we all used to have, it's going away. We're going to watch it on our Apple Watches now, or our whatever watches we have. There's still people in this country that don't have access to internet, which is understandable, but they can get a broadcast signal. Right. So we can still help with education over that broadcast signal, which is public media is still there for. So is it going to look different 3 years down the road or 20 years down the road than it does right now? Absolutely. Is it still going to be founded in that original version of what Fred Rogers stated television could be used for? Absolutely. And that's that's what we're here for. So the future is bright. It's a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of work. And so the kids that are in your classrooms right now, if you're a teacher, they could be the future of broadcasting, the future of media and educational resources, because they're going to share a story of Daniel Tiger, who, by the way, is the next generation of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. You guys haven't put that together yet. You know, it's Daniel is Tiger's son from the original. And, you know, all of the, it's going to evolve. So I'm excited for it. And I'm excited my kids are still going to have it. Even if public media learns may not be there, which it better be. I'm okay with failure, but we'll just change it to public media something else. But no, at least that power of what we do in public television is still going to be there.
Well, Tim, we really appreciate your time. And just so that everybody knows, Oscar the Grouch was orange, came from Gizmodo, cite my source. So I'll make sure I give a shout out to the right place. But we really appreciate your time and for you sharing your vision with us about what role public media plays, as well as how it can influence learners from age 0 all the way up through 99.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for what you do.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you, Fernando. I'm calling you out. The man behind the scenes that's making it all happen.
He does make it all happen.
So, Danny, do you want to give the laser teacher tech tip for today?
Ugh. Do we have to do a tech tip today?
Well, this is kind of a podcast about technology, it might be useful.
I just don't have anything today. I'm tired. My brain cells are not firing. I don't want to. Do you want to?
So, Danny, I think I have a tech tip for us today.
You do?
Yeah.
What's your tech tip?
You know, since we've been talking with Tim from Public Media, I thought we should talk a little bit about and give a shout out to our public media station, KUEN Channel 9.1 UEN TV. If some of our viewers and our listeners haven't been to KUEN lately, we have all kinds of lifelong learning programs.
Like what?
So you can find, I think some of the fun things that they have, especially with us sitting around a lot with quarantines lately, mm-hmm. is they have programs on fitness from home where you can do different things. And especially like for seniors, not high school seniors, but over 65 seniors, sure. lots of things that they can do where they can exercise and kind of connect with things that are more applicable to their kind of their age level as well as to their fitness levels. But we have all kinds of skills that people can learn from. You and I teach in the Makerspace class. They have all kinds of DIY classes on there. Some of the more popular programs are things like lots of sewing classes that they offer on there. And just a lot of different things that you can take a peek at and kind of get an overview of skills that you can learn from home.
And how do I watch this again?
So over the air, so if you have just rabbit ears or you're on a digital television, it's channel 9.1. Mm-hmm. And then if you search in a satellite or cable, you're looking for UEN TV. You can find that on all the different platforms. But additionally, just so people are aware, beyond 9.1, we also have 9.3 FNX, which focuses on Native American programming. Mm-hmm. And we have channel 9.4, The World Japan, which focuses in on information from the Far East.
That's awesome.
So all kinds of things for people that are interested in using public television and public media in their home to kind of learn and grow. And that program I was talking about, 8:30 most days, Sit and Be Fit. That's the program I need.
All right, got it. Jared, thank you so much for getting Tim to come on our show. He's so wonderful.
It was a pretty fun journey back through public television and kind of reminds you of your childhood watching the shows that Tim was talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that he was just so passionate about what he was sharing and so passionate about how public media can help teachers and can help our learners. I loved that.
Yeah, there's no question that even though we have a nostalgic look back at public media is an organization that is moving forward. And it's definitely looking to help learners for future generations understand how they can know more about the world around them.
Now, believe it or not, I do remember having the TV and VCR rolled into my classroom
for
video time in class. I know, it's highly unbelievable. Do you want to know what else I remember from elementary school?
No idea. What do you remember?
The bell.
See you, everybody.